Thought gives continuity to pleasure and sustains fear. You don't finish with the incident of yesterday, whether it's pleasurable or painful. It is finished, but thought can go on living with it. So thought is responsible for holding on to the pleasure and the pain, which is the sustaining. That's what sustains the holding on to and the continuance of fear. So right thought, we're on the right path, and it is a doorway to freedom. But how to discern between wise and unwise thoughts is crucial, because our meditation's teaching us how to look at ourselves, how to get to know ourselves, not to hide from ourselves, but actually get in touch with what exactly is going on inside and out. So how do we discern? Well, again, right thought can lead to wisdom, because it's teaching to help us realize that all of us, all our beings, all the beings on the planet are in the same boat. And that's important to remember, that we're all connected. We don't all have to like or all think the same. But regardless of that, we are connected. So when we can't see or feel that connection, then let's let it be. It's not wasted. Let that be our practice. Noticing, you know, that where's the compassion? I've asked that of myself several times. Where's the compassion? Where's my compassion? As my mind starts taking over. But we can miss the misunderstandings that we find ourselves in by just reminding ourselves. That's what the daily practice does. It puts us more in touch more with what's going on inside. And then we have choices, of course. So we begin to see quite directly what connects or disconnects us from others. And reflecting just on this propels us toward more peace and wisdom. And when the opportunity arises with confusion, we will know to take the confusion to our hearts, away from the mind, go to our bodies, the whole body, and go to that soft part in all of us. And that's where to hold it. It doesn't mean that we're not going to be active and we're not going to do our part to transform what's happening in our country. But we also know that wisdom transforms. And that's what we're hanging out with. That's what we're, trying to work with, is the wisdom of this suffering. So, again, relying on the Buddha, we can plant seeds of loving kindness. And I know for a lot of us, that's just so, so something that we can't connect to easily. I didn't at first either, but it works, and we can begin to have a direct impact or nourish our beneficial thoughts now that we know the true nature of our thoughts, and that we can get in the frame of mind that allows us to choose. So we can nourish these beneficial thoughts. What we think is important. Not to use to condemn ourselves. But get to know the judging mind, because to know the judging mind, you're not going to have to take it personally, because you're not the judging mind, but you know it's there. And from where does it come? Well, it comes from our conditioning. And, you know, our conditioning came when we were very, very young. So are we really that responsible for our conditioning? Well, we can take more responsibility for our conditioning now that we know what to do with it. So, love and kindness, and, you know, there's a whole practice, and Randy practices with us every Monday night. Love and kindness, just thoughts of goodwill. I mean, why not? If you're going to have thoughts, why not have thoughts of goodwill? And begin to plant beautiful seeds of us and them. And it works. And for a lot of it, it's a leap of, it's blind faith. But for many of us, we have experienced it directly. And so, because dwelling in beneficial thoughts nourishes the soil of our mind. So feeling this heart mind with thoughts of goodwill and metta, not Pollyanna. No, we know the difference. We know the difference. Because planting seeds, that's authentic. We're going to the authenticity of our existence because we're touching it, for one thing. So goodwill and metta can disarm a hostility for those who cause suffering. I mentioned something about this last week with the Waking Up Old. It's a sangha that I'm a member of, and we were talking just about compassion and wisdom having to come in a more very conscious way right now because of the situation. And one person was telling us that she tries to see the suffering of the other angry or frustrated person. And she said, I reflect on how it must feel, even within them, that person caught in such anger or such lack of knowing, such ignorance. So we plant and water good seeds as we move through our lives, and it builds on itself. So we notice these beneficial thoughts, but again, we're setting up an intention probably tonight. So that's the first step. Because we want these beneficial thoughts, we want to allow them, and we want to feel these thoughts, and we don't want to push them away. I mean, we don't want to hang on to them, because we know that doesn't work. But we want to the right effort, to stay with them as long as they are there. So we can actually dwell in them, enjoy them, nourish them as we nourish ourselves. Then they start to change our life in wonderful ways. And that we have to find out for ourselves. It's not true until we experience it. It's just words. So another way to work with right thought is observing or noticing when these waterfall of thoughts just keep going. Jack calls them the top 10 recordings. We know them. We have them. Here they come again. And they're just screaming and streaming in our system. And we're somewhat attached because we've not known how to relate to them. And for one thing, we sometimes don't even realize that they're there until we become more conscious of what's going on. So we can wake up to them and just recognize them and allow them. and become interested in them. Not in a way of judging. Oh, yeah, that's my conditioning. You know, yeah, it's there. It's within me. It is not me. But I have was subjected to it. So, and I can act through it if I'm not conscious of what's going on inside. So, out of control thoughts, we can pay attention to our thoughts and get to know what we're saying to ourselves. And we have the practice that teaches us how to do that. So, again, setting an intention tonight to observe the mind with the mind, rather than just being caught in this endless stream of thoughts antagonizing us. So we know we've had enough practice that we know we're not going to believe our thoughts. So thank goodness for that. But when thoughts take over, one of the things that help us is to recognize them, to rein on them, to recognize, to allow them, to become interested in them. And that nourishes our attempt to relate to the stresses of life that before maybe we didn't know what to do except react and cause more suffering for ourselves. And besides, Jack says 90% of what we think today are just reruns. You know, so it's not very interesting, is it? So Jack says, honestly, he says it's like you're stuck in Motel 6 late at night with the shopping channel on and you can't turn it off. So be willing to ask ourselves, what is my intention? What is my best intention? What's behind what I'm saying and what I'm doing? And really, that's the truth of anything that we do, is what's behind it. And in Buddhist psychology, intention manifests itself as volition. And again, we have to know the subtleties of life within to even catch those kinds of things. So, and I've heard it in other places, and I've even said it to others or even to myself, what's driving me? You know, what's moving me? And to look at it in a way that maybe we have never looked at before. But volition is just the mental factor that most determines our consciousness in each moment. It's just reflecting, pausing before action, before speech. So this is how we can begin to set the compass of our hearts. Remember what Jack said? We can set our hearts towards this suffering. And when we practice enough, and you have, we know the difference when we are coming and interacting in life, either in silence through or not in silence, through our hearts or through our minds. And so paying particularly important to it right now, because our intention, what's behind what we say, what's behind what we do, is the source of cause and effect that we talked about last week. Setting the heart with compassion, service, and kindness. And intention, as I said, is a source of cause and effect, which says, if you plant a mango tree, you're going to get a seed, you're going to get a mango tree. If you plant an apple seed, you're going to get an apple tree. So if we plant seeds of anger, then we're going to have an anger tree. No. Our anger is going to increase. So if we plant seeds of kindness, tolerance, and this is about what's going on inside of us, then tolerance does increase. And tonight, hate to put her on the spot, but tonight I've asked Lindsay to share her journey with Metta. She's done that practice and she's shared some of it with us, but not all of us have heard it. And Lindsay, it certainly touched my heart, and I'm sure it's going to touch all of our hearts. So thank you for being willing to do this, because I know it's not easy. But just let us know. You've practiced Metta, and you've let us know a little bit. So let's finish the Dharma talk with what Metta has done for you, okay? Thank you. Let's unmute you.
Can y'all hear me?
Okay. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Anita. That was a lovely talk. Metta is a very, it's a very dear to my heart practice, because it was my main practice for a long time. And there was a year where that was pretty much my only practice, but I was practicing Metta for 15 or 20 minutes every day. I had practiced Vipassana kind of off and on, but about 7 years ago, two things happened that kind of kicked it into high gear. And one was I was still with my husband, and my marriage was getting, my husband is an alcoholic and a drug addict, and it was an abusive relationship, and it was getting progressively darker, undeniably darker. And right around the time when that was happening, my younger brother, who was just one of the loves of my life, we were always really close. He was murdered along with his friend Daniel and his friend Kenny. So all of those things combined, it was just a very, very dark period in my life. And looking for ways to cope with that, for a while I didn't even meditate at all, because I just, even finding my breath, it was, the grief was too intense to untangle at all. I couldn't even sit still. I was just like, I stopped looking like a human and just looked like a desiccated mushroom. I was so hunched from grief. But I started doing a lot of different things to try and move through that. A lot of somatic therapy and like asana and physical stuff to like get some of that through. But for the first time in my life, I felt real hatred in my heart. I felt real anger that was just, I could not let go of. And that's not my temperament. I'm just pretty easygoing by nature. But I felt real hatred, and I could not drop it. And around that time, I think I was just searching. I was just searching for answers everywhere. But around that time, I think it was Jet Kornfield's website that I found the Metta practice. And I thought, well, what the heck, I'll try that. So I said, I'm going to do that. I'll just try and do that every day for a few minutes every day. And at first, to be honest, it felt really phony. I was like, this is bullshit. I mean, wishing myself love. Give me a break. I couldn't feel it. I really couldn't feel it. Like, yeah, may I be happy. May I be peaceful and at ease. I'm not. I just couldn't feel it. But I could wish well to family members or friends, other people I saw that were suffering from the loss of my brother too, because I knew how much they were suffering, and I did want them to have peace. I did want their suffering to end. So I could wish for that. So I did that. And probably about 3 months of making it a daily practice, the self wishing of peace and of happiness finally kind of cracked a little bit in my heart, and I started bawling. I was like, oh, you know, I thought I was fine. My relationship with myself was fine, but you're not in an abusive relationship because you love yourself. Like, there was a lot of not liking myself that I needed to acknowledge. And so I kept doing it. And then every time it became like a daily thing, I would do my metta practice and then I would cry. And I just cried and cried and cried. But it really, when I say that, there's a lot of things that helped me, but that in particular, when I say that it changed my life, it literally changed my life, because there was a couple years after Steve was killed that I knew how I was going to die. It was just, when am I going to do it? And it took that practice over and over again of cracking my heart. I don't know the poem, if it's Hafiz or Khalil Gibran, but there's the poem, my heart cracked and cracked until it learned to stay open. It was that. It was that practice of just like softening in my heart until I could really feel love for myself, that things started to change. And I'm glad we're bringing it up here, because it's a practice that I've kind of put down for a little while, and I'd like to start devoting more time to it again. But I think, you know, I don't know if certain people, like, I don't know if the man that shot my brother, when we went to trial, there was no apology. I don't know if my well-wishing would change certain, you know, there's some people, I don't know if it will reach, but it has changed me, and it's changed my life, and it's shown me the limitless amount of freedom that's possible in every second of the day, that I don't have to live with my heart like that. And for most people, I do feel like if you are in that state of granting them grace and wishing them happiness and wishing them peace and safety, they can feel that energy and they do try to respond with that in kind. I do think it works for most people. And I think that if you're worried about the state of the world, which I am now, it's not going, you know, these are not all the deaths of despair and the opioids and suicide and the violence. It's not individual problems, it's social problems. And we're going to have to do this on a social level. And I feel like for me, this is the most accessible, positive, beautiful, radical activism that's available to change that. So, I got a lot of thoughts on it, but I'll stop there.
What did I say? How lovely. And one night Lindsay came in, she shows up at the Sangha in Wimberley, and she had all these hearts on. I mean, she had her shirt had a heart on it, and, you know, her ankle had a heart, and her socks had hearts. I mean, she was just had hearts. And so when I asked her, what's that all about? And she said, oh, we went to trial today. We went to trial today. And not only did she come to the Sangha, but, you know, she just clothed herself in hearts. And I've not heard a better story than that, Lindsay. And I have gotten to know you, and, you know, your heart is most evident. So when I grow up, I want to be just like you. So thank you so much for sharing. And now we're going to